It's time for the world to stop kidding itself, to wake up, to realize that the only problem of humanity is lack of love. Love breeds tolerance. Tolerance breeds peace. Intolerance produces war and looks indifferently upon intolerable conditions. Love cannot be indifferent. It does not know how. The fastest way to get to a place of love and concern for all humankind is to see all humankind as your family. The fastest way to see all humankind as your family is to stop separating yourself. Each of the nation states now making up your world must unite.
We do have the United Nations,
which has been powerless and impotent. In order for that body to work, it would have to be completely restructured. Not impossible, but perhaps difficult and cumbersome.
Okay, what do you propose?
I don't have a proposal. I merely offer observations. In this dialogue, you tell me what your new choices are, and I offer observations and ways to manifest that. What is it you now choose with regard to the current relationship between people and nations on your planet?
All right, I'll use your words. If I had my way, I would choose for us to get to a place of love and concern for all humankind.
Given that choice, I observe that what would work would be the formation of a new world political community, with each nation state having an equal say in the world's affairs and an equal proportionate share of the world's resources.
Ah, it'll never work. The haves will never surrender their sovereignty, wealth, resources to the have-nots. And argumentatively, why should they?
Because it is in their best interest.
Well, they don't see that, and I'm not sure that I do.
If you could add billions of dollars a year to your nation's economy, dollars which could be spent to feed the hungry, clothe the needy, house the poor, bring security to the elderly, provide better health, and produce a dignified standard of living for all, wouldn't that be in your nation's best interests?
Well, in America, there are those who would argue that it would help the poor at the expense of the rich and the middle-income taxpayer. Meanwhile, the country goes to hell, crime ravages the nation, inflation robs the people of their life savings, unemployment skyrockets, the government grows bigger and fatter, and in school they're handing out condoms.
You sound like a radio talk show.
Well, these are the concerns of many Americans.
Then they are short-sighted. Do you not see that if billions of dollars a year, that's millions a month, hundreds and hundreds of thousands a week, unheard of amounts each day, could be sunk back into your system, that if you could use these monies to feed your hungry, clothe your needy, house your poor, bring security to your elderly, and provide health care and dignity to all, the causes of crime would be lost forever? Do you not see that new jobs would mushroom as dollars were pumped back into your economy? That your own government could even be reduced because it would have less to do?
I suppose some of that could happen. I can't imagine government ever getting smaller, but just where are these millions and billions going to come from? Taxes imposed by your new world government? More taking from those who work to get it, to give to those who won't stand on their own 2 feet and go after it?
Is that how you frame it?
No, but it is how a great many people see it. I just wanted to fairly state their view.
Well, I'd like to talk about that later. Right now, I don't want to get off track, but I want to come back to that later.
Great.
But you've asked where these new dollars would come from. Well, they would not have to come from any new taxes imposed by the New World community, although members of the community, individual citizens, would want, under an enlightened governance, to send 10% of their income to provide for society's needs as a whole. Nor would they come from new taxes imposed by any local government. In fact, some local governments would surely be able to reduce taxes. All of these benefits would result from the simple restructuring of your worldview. The simple reordering of your world political configuration.
How?
The money you save from building defense systems and attack weapons.
Oh, I get it. You want us to close down the military.
Not just you. Everybody in the world. But not close down your military. Simply reduce it drastically. Internal order would be your only need. You could strengthen local police. something you say you want to do but cry each year at budget time that you cannot do, at the same time dramatically reducing your spending on weapons of war and preparations for war, that is, offensive and defensive weapons of mass destruction.
Well, first, I think your figures exaggerate how much could be saved by doing that. Second, I don't think you'll ever convince people they should give up their ability to defend themselves.
Let's look at the numbers. As of March 1994, the world's governments spend about $1 trillion a year for military purposes. That's $1 million a minute worldwide. The nations that are spending the most could redirect the most to the other priorities mentioned. So larger, richer nations would see it in their best interest to do so, if they thought it was possible. But larger, richer nations cannot imagine going defenseless, for they fear aggression and attack from the nations which envy them and want what they have. There are two ways to eliminate this threat. Share enough of the world's total wealth and resources with all of the world's people so that no one will want and need what someone else has, and everyone may live in dignity and remove themselves from fear. Create a system for the resolution of differences that eliminates the need for war, and even the possibility of it.
The people of the world would probably never do this.
They already have.
They have?
Yes. There is a great experiment now going on in your world in just this sort of political order. That experiment is called the United States of America.
Which you said was failing miserably.
It is. It has very far to go before it could be called a success. Still, it is the best experiment going. As Winston Churchill said, democracy is the worst system, except all others.
Your nation was the first to take a loose confederation of individual states and successfully unite them into a cohesive group, each submitting to one central authority. At the time, none of the states wanted to do this, and each resisted mightily, fearing the loss of its individual greatness and claiming that such a union would not serve its best interests. It may be instructive to understand just what was going on with these individual states at that time. While they had joined together in a loose confederation, there was no real U.S. government, and hence no power to enforce the Articles of Confederation to which the states had agreed. The states were conducting their own foreign affairs, several reaching private agreements on trade and other matters with France, Spain, England, and other countries. States traded with each other as well, and although their Articles of Confederation forbade it, some states added tariffs to the goods shipped in from other states, just as they did for goods from across the ocean. Merchants had no choice but to pay at the harbor if they wanted to buy or sell their goods, there being no central authority. Although there was a written agreement to prohibit such taxing. The individual states also fought wars with each other. Each state considered its militia a standing army. Nine states had their own navies, and "Don't Tread on Me" could have been the official motto of every state in the Confederation. Over half of the states were even printing their own money, although the Confederation had agreed that doing so would also be illegal. In short, your original states, though joined together under the Articles of Confederation, were acting exactly as independent nations do today. Although they could see that the agreements of their confederation, such as the granting to Congress the sole authority to coin money, were not working, they staunchly resisted creating and submitting to a central authority that could enforce these agreements and put some teeth into them. Yet in time, a few progressive leaders began to prevail. They convinced the rank and file that there was more to be gained by creating such a new federation than they would ever lose. Merchants would save money and increase profits because individual states could no longer tax each other's goods. Governments would save money and have more to put into programs and services that truly helped people because resources would not have to be used to protect individual states from each other. The people would have greater security and safety and greater prosperity, too, by cooperating with rather than fighting with each other. Far from losing their greatness, each state could become greater still. And that, of course, is exactly what has happened. The same could be made to happen with the 160 nation states in the world today if they were to join together in a united federation, it could mean an end to war.
How so? There would still be disagreements.
So long as humans remain attached to outer things, that is true. There's a way to truly eliminate war and all experience of unrest and lack of peace. But that is a spiritual solution. We are here exploring a geopolitical one. Actually, the trick is to combine the two. Spiritual truth must be lived in practical life to change everyday experience. Until this change occurs, there would still be disagreements. You are right. Yet there need not be wars. There need not be killing. Are there wars between California and Oregon over water rights? Between Maryland and Virginia over fishing? Between Wisconsin and Illinois? Ohio and Massachusetts?
No.
And why not? Have not various disputes and differences arisen between them?
Through the years, I suppose so.
You can bet on it. But these individual states have voluntarily agreed. It was a simple, voluntary agreement to abide by certain laws and abide by certain compromises on matters common to them, while retaining the right to pass separate statutes on matters relating to each individually. And when disputes between states do arise due to differing interpretations of the federal law, or someone simply breaking that law, the matter is taken to a court, which has been granted the authority, that is, given the authority by the states to resolve the dispute. And if the current body of law does not provide a precedent or a means by which the matter can be brought through the courts to a satisfactory resolution, the states and the people in them send their representatives to a central government to try to create agreement on new laws that will produce a satisfactory circumstance, or at the very least, a reasonable compromise. This is how your federation works. A system of laws, a system of courts, empowered by you to interpret those laws, and a justice system, backed by armed might, if needed, to enforce the decisions of those courts. Although no one could argue that the system doesn't need improving, this political concoction has worked for more than 200 years. There is no reason to doubt that the same recipe will work between nation states as well.
If this is so simple, why hasn't it been tried?
It has. Your League of Nations was an early attempt. The United Nations is the latest. Yet one failed and the other has been only minimally effective because, like the 13 states of America's original confederation, the member nation states, particularly the most powerful, are afraid they have more to lose than to gain from the reconfiguration. That is because the people of power are more concerned with holding on to their power than with improving the quality of life for all people. The haves know that such a world federation would inevitably produce more for the have-nots, but the haves believe this would come at their expense, and they're giving up nothing.